Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. Today's episode is inspired by a listener who asked, can you share some tips for managing perimenopause when you're also dealing with something like an autoimmune condition, SIBO, or mold illness? So this is such a great question because it is a really relevant one. Because for so many women, perimenopause isn't just happening in isolation. When we move into the phase of perimenopause and our hormones start to change and bring about, you know, various symptoms and experiences that we've talked about a lot on this podcast, a lot of us are moving into perimenopause having already some pre-existing health imbalances. For example, an autoimmune condition like rheumatoid arthritis or thyroid Hashimoto's disease, which is autoimmunity against the thyroid, or it could be SIBO, this small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So major kind of bacterial imbalances within the gut causing issues and symptoms, or it could be mold illness. So that's where somebody's had exposure to mold or they have currently exposure to mold and it's starting to affect their actual, you know, their actual health. It's been colonized in the body, for example. And any of those three things, autoimmunity, SIBO, mold illness, they all come with their own set of challenges and symptoms and experiences that can be really challenging. And then if we're at a stage where we're also now moving into perimenopause with any or all of these things, it often, you know, adds this extra layer of health challenges, basically. In a situation where we're already demanding a lot from our body and nervous system just to deal with, say, the condition, whether it's autoimmunity, SIBO, mold illness, but then you add perimenopause into the mix and it can just be so much more, is so much more challenging. So if you're someone who's not just navigating hormonal changes in perimenopause, but you're also managing something like autoimmunity, chronic gut issues like SIBO, or an ongoing mold exposure, then I just want you to know that I see you and I have, I work with many clients just like you. And it's something that I've always worked with as a nutritional therapist. We see clients from, you know, with all kind of different health challenges. And so I've had experience with all of these things over the years, over the last 11 years that I've been practicing. And whether or not we're in perimenopause, you know, these situations are still issues within their own right that need addressing. And then if we are, as I said, in perimenopause as well, we still need to address these issues and perimenopause, address the whole picture to support the whole body. So I see you, I hear you, and I hope this episode can bring you a little breath of relief. And a reminder that healing is still possible for you, even when things might now start to feel or become more complex as you're moving into and through perimenopause, or maybe you're late perimenopause, or even postmenopause, or just moving into, you know, getting to that point of being menopause. Either way, I really hope that this episode can bring you that little breath of relief. So we'll dive in, because I do think, as I said, this is a great question. So I'm assuming that this person potentially has all three situations going on in her body. Maybe she does have an autoimmune condition. She possibly has SIBO and or a mold illness. You know, she asked about all three. So I'm wondering if all three are there. And what this person or other people in the similar situation might be thinking is, you know, there's just no hope for me, or this is all so complex. How am I supposed to work through everything now? And then I'm in perimenopause as well. It's just, you know, you can feel like you just doomed, you just want to give up, like, what's the point? But I really want you to know that there is so much you can do to support your body. Obviously, I've done separate episodes on autoimmunity. I can do separate episodes on SIBO or other chronic gut issues. We can do one on mold exposure. But what we talk about today, what I'm going to go into today, are just literally the tips that this person was asking for managing perimenopause when you're also dealing with something like these conditions as well. So I will, as I said, have separate episodes on these things, but hopefully today is just a nice kind of overview of just some simple things that you can do to support yourself and to hopefully show you that it's, although things are quite complex with your body, with dealing with these kind of health imbalances and now perimenopause, the answers don't have to be complex. So that's hopefully the takeaway message as well. So first of all, why do these things often show up together? Really, it's that perimenopause naturally puts stress on the body. So I've talked about previous episodes, I've talked about what is happening in perimenopause, what is changing, the sort of knock-on impact that has, particularly to the nervous system, the stress response system in the body. And I have said perimenopause naturally puts an extra load of stress on the body. Your hormones are fluctuating. Estrogen is essentially soaring and crashing in, you know, all at once in one day, in one half a day, and progesterone is steadily declining. And all of this is happening really from anywhere from early 40s upwards. And those changes to those, the changes to those two hormones affects your immune system, your nervous system, your gut, your liver, and more systems as well. So if you have a pre-existing condition and then you move into perimenopause, which already then impacts somebody's immune system, nervous system, gut, liver, you know, gallbladder, everything, then that's going to put extra pressure on the pre-existing condition. Estrogen, for example, plays a really big role in immune regulation. So, you know, somebody with a pre-existing autoimmune condition, they have, before perimenopause, they should have lots of good support, lots of anti-inflammatory immune regulating support from estrogen being in more in balance, healthier levels and not erratic, not soaring and dipping. But when it starts to drop, when it starts to change in perimenopause, when it starts to become more erratic, then the immune function can also start to become more erratic and potentially starting to trigger flare-ups in autoimmune symptoms. I hear it a lot. It's very, very common. I've worked with many clients who say, as I've moved into perimenopause, my rheumatoid arthritis is just flaring all the time. It's never been so bad. You know, I had it under control. And the further they move through their 40s, they might find these flares more and more so. So again, there's a lot we can do, which is what we're going to talk about today. But then moving on from estrogen, progesterone has calming anti-inflammatory effects. So again, as that is starting to decline, women can start to feel more inflamed, more anxious, more reactive. And if they had pre-existing autoimmunity or gut imbalances or mold illness, which is quite an inflammatory situation in the body, then as they lose that calming anti-inflammatory effects of progesterone, they'll start to again experience more of a flare-up of these situations. It's also quite common if a person didn't know that they had any pre-existing autoimmunity, for example, that as they move into perimenopause and the change in hormones, it can trigger or highlight what was already there, but we didn't really know about it until now. So it's quite common for women to get diagnosed with, for example, thyroid autoimmunity, which is Hashimoto's, or rheumatoid arthritis in their 40s as well. So if you've already got something like SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is essentially imbalances in bacteria in the small intestine, that would make the gut lining fragile and the microbiome off balance. Or if you're recovering from mold exposure, then your resilience is likely already going to be lower. And then you add in perimenopause and it's no wonder symptoms feel like they're stacking up. And like I said, you can start to feel quite overwhelmed and think, well, I'm doomed. Like, what can I, you know, is there anything I can actually do? So let's talk about what you can do. I'm going to walk you through six key areas that I focus on with my clients and how you can begin to start supporting yourself today. So the first area is supporting the nervous system every day. If there's one non-negotiable, it is this. When any type of healing, physical, we might kind of dismiss something like nervous system support, stress management, you know, if you're dealing with autoimmunity or bacterial imbalances or mold illness, you sort of think, well, this is a physical thing, right? Why would I be looking at my stress? Why would I be looking to support my nervous system? Well, I'm telling you, this is the one non-negotiable area to be addressing. Autoimmune flares, relapses in SIBO, hormone chaos, they all trigger the nervous system. But healing can only happen when your body feels safe. So imagine if somebody has autoimmunity, if they have mold illness, they have SIBO, their nervous system is triggered, in essentially every day. And that is putting the nervous system does not feel safe with these, whatever it is, whether it's autoimmunity, whether it's mold, whether it's SIBO, whether it's all three, the nervous system no longer feels safe when this imbalance is going on. So we can only start to heal. We can only start to manage symptoms, manage perimenopause symptoms, if the body can start to feel safe. So I really encourage you to build a daily nervous system regulation practice. Even just 5 to 10 minutes a day can be really impactful, particularly if you're someone that's not doing anything and you start adding in 5 to 10 minutes a day. It can be really significant in how that can start to support you. So things that you can do yourself would be daily breathing techniques like the 4-6 ratio breathing, breathing into a count of four, through the nose, mouth closed, all through the belly, feeling the belly rise as you breathe in to a count of four, and then feeling the belly kind of deflate as you breathe out slowly to a count of six. It's simply just doing this for 3 to 5 minutes has been shown to rebalance the nervous system in that moment, really essentially reduce stress in that moment, rebalance cortisol. So that is a lovely thing to do. It could be first thing in the morning, last thing at night, both. That would be great. You could tap into it during the day. If you work from home, even if you don't, just find a space where you can spend 3 to 5 minutes in the mid section of your day just doing that, maybe before lunch or after lunch, before you go back to work, something like that. EFT, tapping, emotional freedom technique. This is a great one. You can just learn how to do it. There's plenty of YouTube tutorial videos that show you the various points on the hand and the upper body that we tap in a sort of sequence, in an order, whilst we're saying a particular phrase about, for example, I feel anxious, or I feel unwell, but I deeply and completely accept myself. It's similar to that. So you can have a look on YouTube for EFT tapping technique tutorials. And that is something really simple and easy to do. You could do that in the morning. You could do it anytime during the day when you're just feeling overwhelmed by your symptoms. Yoga nidra, or some other sort of guided body scan rest. So yoga nidra is also known as non-sleep deep rest, or NSDR. That's the more sort of scientific term for it. But yeah, yoga nidra is essentially a lying down body scan meditation. There's no movement involved. You are just lying down listening to a guided body scan. They're different durations. You can get them for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, anywhere up to like 90 minutes, 45 minutes. I would always suggest, if someone has the time and you're, you know, dealing with these kind of chronic illnesses, that you do make the time, maybe sort of half an hour a day, where you can lie down, or most days if you can, where you can just find somewhere quiet and lay yourself down and plug it in. It's shown to be extremely restorative for the nervous system, helping to rebalance cortisol and allow us to, you know, help us to feel safe. Journaling. So essentially, you know, just writing down what you're struggling with, what your worries are, what you want to let go of, all of these sorts of things can just be really helpful to write down, almost like your own therapy practice by yourself, getting things onto paper with like handwritten as opposed to typing on a computer has been shown to be quite powerful. Grounding outside with bare feet, if you can get into a garden, if you have a garden, if you have soil somewhere that you can access, even just being in nature, just being in nature has been shown to be so regulating to our nervous system, for helping to rebalance cortisol and calm that stress response. So just being out in nature is a really powerful thing to do. I had a break earlier and I just felt, I just want to go to my local park. So I just wandered down and I just strolled around listening to the birds in the trees, looking up at all the trees. I find looking up at the trees as they, you know, the high ones is really, I find it so therapeutic. So ideally you're out in nature, you're not listening to anything or on the phone, you're really just paying attention to all the sounds and the sights. That's been shown to be very grounding and safe promoting for the body. And of course, there's other things that we can do outside of this. So these are things that we do ourselves, we can do for free. But things like craniosacral therapy is a lovely one to tap into. Somatic experiencing, if you can find a one-to-one somatic experiencing practitioner. I think there's a lot of them work online nowadays, so you should always be able to access one. These kind of practices can also be really helpful. And the goal isn't about being perfect and doing all of these things every day. It's just about tapping into one or two of these things throughout your week, you know, as much as you can every day, and then keeping it consistent. So let's say you do 4-6, you commit to doing 4-6 breathing for 3 to 5 minutes every morning, every night before bed, every morning when you wake up. And maybe you'll do a yoga nidra guided body scan rest 3 times a week. And then you might journal as part of your 4-6 breathing in the morning or evening. You might add in a journal to one of those just for, like, again, 3 to 5 minutes, writing stuff down. You might do that in the morning or the evening. That could be quite easy to do. And then you'll also just commit to getting out into nature more so through the week. And then maybe as time goes on, you may be able to also invest in, like I say, somatic experiencing or craniosacral therapy as well. And then, so moving on to the second area, balancing blood sugar. I talk about this a lot, but it is really, really important. That's why I talk about it a lot. We want to be balancing our blood sugar like it's a day job. Honestly, it doesn't have to feel like a day job, but it has to be something that we're focused on all the time. For me, it's second nature. I eat in a way that balances my blood sugar, and I have just been doing that for the last probably 10 years. So it is second nature. It's nothing that stresses me out. And I don't have to think too hard. I just eat in a way that, you know, every meal is a balanced meal. I always focus on protein first and then build everything around it. I have my go-to meals and I have my timings that I eat, and it works. And we can all get to that. You know, it might feel overwhelming at first if we do have a lot of work to do to make the changes that need to be made to get to that stage. But we can all get there, is what I'm saying. So we really want to manage this, because blood sugar spikes and crashes drive inflammation. They drive hormone imbalances, and they drive things like mood swings, fatigue, sleep issues, mood issues, anxiety. And so if we have this pre-existing chronic illnesses like SIBO or mold illness or autoimmunity, blood sugar imbalances is just going to continue to sort of perpetuate the flares, you know, because there's essentially can be driven by inflammation, and blood sugar spikes and crashes drive that inflammation. And then we move into perimenopause, which is essentially hormonal imbalance. Again, blood sugar spikes and crashes drive hormonal imbalance. So it's just going to make those everything worse, basically. And I'm not saying that to, you know, I don't want it to sound bad, but this is really important. And it's something that we can get a handle on. We can manage this ourselves. And we don't have to do anything really big and fancy other than look at what we're eating and see what changes, where we can make changes. So, for example, how to keep blood sugar steady is to prioritize protein with every meal. And I will say, especially breakfast, because most women are still just not accepting the truth that they need to eat a certain amount of protein at breakfast, and they're just not eating enough. I hear it all the time. I hear, oh, but I have porridge with nuts, or I have, I have sourdough bread with nut butter, or I have chia pudding and with nuts and nut butter. And these are great foods. You know, these are healthy fats. These are nutritious foods with lots of different nutrients as well. We need those. Don't get rid of them. But that's still not much protein. It's still way better than a bowl of regular cereal, a couple of slices of toast. Of course, it's better than those things. And that is great that you've stepped up to that. But now it's time to take that even further and say, right, there's probably about realistically 10 grams of protein in my breakfast. Where can I get about another 20? Because ideally, most women, it's going to be different from person to person. And I work this out with every one-to-one client. But, you know, generally, most women should be having at least 30 grams of pure protein with every meal. So 2 eggs, for example, is about 10 to 12 grams. Just for the sake of understanding how much protein is in various foods, a regular size cooked chicken breast is about 28 grams or something like that. So yeah, if you were to have that at breakfast, you're done. That's brilliant. But otherwise, it's about thinking about, like, learning how much protein is in various foods, and then mixing and matching at breakfast, or pulling together a good, really good quality breakfast smoothie where you're essentially putting together lots of different whole foods and blending them, essentially, just because it's easier and quicker at that time of day when we tend to not have much time to sit down and eat a meal. So that, you know, your protein smoothie, for example, could be very good quality unflavored protein powder that's pure. And then you're using a serving that is enough to provide 25 to 30 grams of protein, because you might get more protein from other bits that you'll put in there, like different seeds, like sunflower, pumpkin, chia seed. You can put lovely good fats there from avocado, coconut oil, coconut milk. Use berries, which can just be kept frozen in the freezer, which makes it much more convenient and cheaper. And they're a nice low sugar fruit that are full of lovely antioxidants and things. And then, yeah, things like maybe some cinnamon. You can just use water as opposed to having to buy these cartons of plant-based milks, which are just mostly water that you're spending a lot of money on. So yeah, you can just put together lots of nutritious stuff like flaxseed, you can put nut butters, and just blend it all together. And there you have, with your protein powder, a nice balanced breakfast. On the days that you just don't have time to, or the inclination to eat anything bigger than that. And the other thing is to not skip meals, because that leads to energy crashes. So lots of us who are fasting too long overnight, not having breakfast until 11 o'clock, that really is not very helpful for blood sugar control. It places quite a lot of stress on an already stressed out nervous system that's got chronic illness and now is in perimenopause. So it really is the last thing we want to do. We also don't want to skip lunch if we're having breakfast and then skipping lunch and tending to just not have anything and wait until dinner. So we definitely don't want to be doing that. 3 square meals per day, starting with breakfast within about an hour or so of waking, 4-ish hours later lunch, 4 or 5 hours later dinner. That is the ideal way to do it. If you're eating enough at all of those meals, you should not feel hungry in between. Always pair any carbohydrates with protein or fat. So avoiding carbohydrate-based snacks or carbohydrate-based meals that are not balanced out with protein and fat. You know, so many people they come to me with quite good meals, but then their snacks a couple of times a day. So they're not eating enough at their meals, otherwise they wouldn't need the snacks. But then their snacks are things like crackers or some toast or maybe just like oat cakes on their own or rice cakes on their own. And, you know, they're not protein or fat based, they're just carb based. So that will have an impact on blood sugar imbalance. Or they're sort of munching away on all different fruits throughout the day, which again is not great because it's not paired with protein or fat, which helps to balance blood sugar better. So even this one change, managing blood sugar, starting to increase your protein with every meal, can really start to significantly reduce things like anxiety, fatigue, low energy, sleep issues. And, you know, all the other sort of things like brain fog, all of these can be reduced just by this one thing. We can really start to improve our sleep as well by managing blood sugar. So this will also be starting to take away some of that inflammation that might be being driven by blood sugar imbalances. The third area is to start to reduce your inflammatory load. So we've just talked about blood sugar control, which is already going to be reducing an inflammatory load. We've also talked about stress system support, nervous system support, which is also going to be reducing some of your inflammatory load, because stress and nervous system dysregulation is quite inflammatory. But other ways you can do that, because inflammation is the common thread between autoimmunity, SIBO, mold, and perimenopause, other ways we can reduce our inflammatory load are things like increasing extra virgin olive oil, lots of herbs and spices, fresh or dried, all the different colors of herbs and spices. You know, think of the ones that have quite pigmented colors, if that makes sense. So paprika, turmeric, ginger, cinnamon, and then like fresh herbs, you know, parsley, dill. Why can't I think off the top of my head? We have loads of fresh herbs, basil, thyme, all of them. And as I said, extra virgin olive oil, just drizzle it over your meals and your salads, berries. These are, mentioned them earlier for maybe your smoothies. These can be frozen as well, but berries are just wonderful. They're the lowest sort of sugar fruits, and they are full of lovely antioxidants and what we call phytonutrients, so plant chemicals that have been shown to have anti-inflammatory, antioxidant properties. Omega-3 rich foods like oily fish, like salmon, mackerel, sardines, herring, trout, flaxseed contain some omega-3, but you're really going to get the biggest bang for your buck from oily fish. Gentle movement, looking after your sleep. These also are lovely and anti-inflammatory. Cooking with things like ginger, fresh ginger, maybe putting a knob of fresh ginger into a blender with fresh lemon juice. Sometimes I just do that and then, you know, just drink little shots every so often. And, you know, cooking with lots of things, lots like garlic and onions, these are just nice ways to start in increasing your anti-inflammatory foods. But really thinking about what are your top triggers? Maybe it is gluten, maybe it's alcohol, maybe, as you know, it's mold in your home, but you're in the process of doing something about it. And like I said, that's a whole other cast or 10 to talk through that. Maybe it's poor sleep, maybe it's emotional stress, but thinking about what you think your top triggers are. Maybe, like I said, it's gluten in the way that you know you're having really good quality sourdough, which is all very common, including me. I have found a wonderful bakery where we live and they do the most amazing sourdough, and we go and pick up a loaf every Saturday. And I've been saying to myself for the last 4 months that we've been here, I want to stop loving this bread so much, because before I moved here, I wasn't in the habit of having, I would have a slice of sourdough maybe once a week, if that, and I'm not knowingly sensitive to gluten in any way. But now that I've moved here and we found this bakery, I'm sort of digging into it like a few times a week. So that's something I feel could be a potential trigger for me, and I would like to look at that. For you, is it alcohol? Is it emotional stress? Don't be thinking about this about, you know, maybe it's things that you can't do anything about, like maybe there is some acute emotional stress that you can't quite get rid of at the moment. So I don't want you to feel again like you're doomed, but it's just understanding and reflecting what are your top triggers, and is there any room for change in that? You know, is there a way that you can remove certain things, reduce certain things, support certain areas? Maybe it's the sleep, maybe that, you know, you feel like other things are in line, but your sleep just isn't good, and maybe you just need real support with that right now to help, because that could be one of your biggest triggers. So, you know, these things, we wouldn't consider them as inflammatory, but they are. So the fourth area is supporting our gut. So obviously with SIBO or mold, there can be some aggressive gut protocols that can be more harming than good, particularly during perimenopause. So you really want to know what you're doing with things like that. Be working with a very, you know, experienced practitioner who doesn't just, because there are some practitioners out there who are just like, oh, it's SIBO. Oh, you know, oh, this person has an overgrowth of bacteria. So there's this particular protocol of, aggressive natural herbs that have been shown to get rid of certain strains of bacteria and help, you know, restore balance. But that doesn't always work for everybody. And we don't want to go that aggressively with everybody, or maybe not even at all. Maybe we actually need to be focusing more on what needs to go in rather than what needs to come out. So for example, a blend of some very good specific types of probiotics have been shown to support the reduction of SIBO, even the reduction of mold colonization in the gut, in a way that does not cause any sort of aggressive stripping away of using these aggressive antimicrobial or restrictive diet protocols. There could be no need for that in a lot of cases. So it's very important that while working with someone who's quite experienced in that and understands you and your unique situation and doesn't just match you up with a particular protocol. So of course, if you want any, you know, if you want one-to-one help with this stuff, I am here for that. That's what I'm trained to do and qualified to do. So do reach out to me if you think you might want to work with me one-to-one to solve any of this. Instead of sort of rushing into these antimicrobials or restrictive diets, really do start with the basics. Things that you can focus on yourself are chewing your food thoroughly. No point eating a really healthy meal without chewing every mouthful really well before you swallow it. Digestive process starts in the mouth before we've even swallowed our food. So making sure you're chewing every mouthful very well, taking longer over your meals, eating in a calm state. So maybe sitting down and taking a few deep breaths, that 4-6 breathing for about 60 seconds before you actually start to eat. Don't be scrolling. This is me talking to myself. Don't be scrolling while you're eating your food. I literally sit there and stop that. I'm telling myself, stop that. What are you doing? So don't be scrolling. Don't be rushing. Eat in a calm state. Maybe there's something you can listen to while you're eating, but, you know, set it up, put your phone out of the way and just Maybe you listen to an audiobook if you're eating on your own. You know, like I have my lunch by myself at home in the middle of my working day. So yeah, just maybe listen to something, but don't be looking at things. Try digestive bitters before meals if you can tolerate them, or even things like a little bit of apple cider vinegar diluted with some water. So raw apple cider vinegar, always dilute it. I wouldn't just take it straight. That can be a little, you know, if you have SIBO, if you have mold, you kind of don't want to just go in there straight with this undiluted apple cider vinegar. Maybe a good quality digestive enzyme before your meals as well can just help you to break that food down properly. And that will help with the balance of bacteria in your gut. And also including gut soothing foods. These are also, not only are they gut soothing, they're also anti-inflammatory. So, you know, also help with that reduction of inflammation. So things like bone broth, 24-hour bone broth, stewed apples has also been shown to soothe the gut, but just be careful with the sugar aspect, you know, the blood sugar aspect. So maybe you'd want to pair that with protein and some fats, like maybe some coconut milk, and a little bit of protein powder can go in there as well, just to help balance that out a little bit. And also herbal teas, peppermint tea, nettle tea, these are all lovely for the gut. And just remember, you know, healing the gut is a process, and sometimes less is more when it comes to gut work. And that's why I say, you know, make sure if you are working with a practitioner that you are working with someone experienced. And that is something I'm definitely well-versed in, is supporting, you know, gut healing processes. I've done lots of it over the years, and I'm always up to date with the best ways to do that, because it's, you know, perimenopause isn't just about hormone balance. It's about, and this is what I say all the time, like in my work, it's supporting the body as a whole. It's a 360 approach to our body. So that's basically to our health. It's basically looking at all the different systems in the body as one and supporting all of those. So if I'm going to help women through nutrition and lifestyle to manage perimenopause, I'm also needing to understand and do, you know, practice how to support everything: liver, gut, immune system, you know, nervous system, everything. So it's definitely something, as what I'm saying, you know, behind the scenes, I am trained and qualified in supporting the body as a whole. So the fifth area is about supporting your detoxification pathways gently and every day. So this is essentially promoting liver health. Your liver isn't just detoxing external toxins that are coming in from our environment. We tend to think, you know, detoxing is like getting rid of all these external toxins that we've taken in, you know, not having alcohol for a month and that kind of thing. But the liver is always detoxifying an internally made toxins, essentially. And that's not to say that estrogen is a toxin, because it's not. But one thing that the liver is very responsible for is metabolizing your used estrogen. So metabolizing basically means breaking something down and getting use out of it. So when we've used estrogen, that molecule goes into the liver, you know, all day, every day, and it's getting metabolized, getting broken down by way of two kind of complex phases within the liver that do this, phase one and phase two. If you've got a high toxin load in your body from, let's say, mold illness, gut imbalances, gut bacterial imbalances, your liver may already be working overtime. So that detox, the metabolism of estrogen can be somewhat impaired, not as efficient as it should be. And that, you know, with the ups and downs, the erratic nature of estrogen in perimenopause, we want to be making sure more than ever now we are metabolizing and clearing our estrogen better than ever before. And this can be a time where we're actually clearing it worse than ever before because of potential other loads in the body that are impacting its efficiency. So every day we want to support your detox pathways very gently with, by way of things like cruciferous vegetables eaten daily. So make these the foundation of your vegetable supply. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, rocket, watercress, pak choy. These are wonderful vegetables and salad stuffs to be made the sort of foundation. And then add on top of those lovely green veg, lots of different colors and types, you know, of other different vegetables as well. But make the cruciferous family of veg your base, You want to be filtering your water rather than drinking it straight from the tap. So something simple and low cost would be using a Brita filter, which is what I'm using at the moment, until I get to a stage where I can get myself something like more fitted into the home water system. Sweating in some way, whether it's through, you know, gentle movement or use of sauna. If you have mold illness, I would just caution with use of sauna. You may not be, if your mold issues are causing a lot of sort of chronic fatigue and lots of sensitivities within your system, then you may have to go very, very slowly with something like sauna. You don't just want to go straight in and start doing half an hour and doing it every day. You know, you might just need to do 5 minutes once a week for a little while and sort of build yourself up. So do caution with that. But if we can sort of get our body moving gently every day, whether we do sweat or not, the sweating is helpful, but even just the movement, whether it's yoga, even like walking, qigong, these kind of things, really helpful, gentle ways of movement every day can just help to move toxins around the body. And then if we can sweat as well, that can help to get those toxins out of the body through the sweat. Using dry brushing and castor oil packs is also very helpful for helping to get the toxins moving around the lymph, and again helping to get those out of the body as well. Just please avoid harsh detox trends. You know, anything that says detox, you know, juice fast for a week or water fast, these are not true detoxification plans, let's say. You know, what your body really needs is nourishment. It needs daily nervous system support, daily nourishment, blood sugar balance, plenty of cruciferous vegetables, movement, filtered water. It needs it consistently every single day. These things will go a lot further for supporting your detox pathways than any sort of detox, 30-day detox or anything that you might see out there. So please do be careful with those things. B vitamins as well, very helpful for supporting detoxification pathways. Protein, very important for supporting detox as well. Number six would be supporting mitochondria and energy production. So chronic illness and hormone changes affect your mitochondria, the tiny little part of your cells that is responsible for making energy. The hormone changes of perimenopause affect your mitochondria and having a chronic illness. So if you've got two together, the both things together, you may have that sort of additional strain on that production of energy from your cells. So if you're tired, foggy, crashing by mid-afternoon, you know, and you need to break, you need to stop, you're not lazy, you're not doing anything wrong. This is what you need to be doing, and you need to listen to your body if that's what it's asking for. Your mitochondria need love, they need support. We can support them with B vitamins, with magnesium, with CoQ10, with PQQ is one that some practitioners are using. But I would caution you only to use that if you're working with a one-to-one practitioner who understands this stuff. Don't just go looking for this online. You really need to understand, do you need it? What do you need? How much do you need? Same with CoQ10. Don't be just doing that by yourself. Good quality, high quality protein, very important to support your mitochondria. Resting and pacing, you know, like I said, if you get to a certain point in the day and you just need a break or you need to stop, you have to pace yourself in a way that works for you and add rest, weave rest into your day in some ways, however you can. You know, we all have very different schedules and ways of working and jobs. So in any way that you can, where can you add in a little bit of rest and a little bit more pacing into your day? So there are lots more sort of deeper ways to support all of these six areas. But what I wanted to do in this episode was just kind of give you that top level. These are some things you can be doing in your everyday to support them rather than going really deep into the weeds that I might do with a one-to-one client, for example, because you are obviously listening to this and I'm here to give you information and guidance, but I'm not your practitioner. So I don't know what your own unique situation is. So I can't be giving out, you know, too much deep level advice when it comes to, say, supplements or maybe just other kind of, advice that I don't know works for you or not, or whether it's what you need. So hopefully this kind of more top level things that you can just be doing, you can get, you know, think about and go off and start trying out will be very helpful. And it will, you know, just going through some of this top level stuff that I've given you today will really make a difference. So I really just want to say, finally, you are allowed to go slower. You know, if you're dealing with chronic illness and now you're moving into perimenopause as well, you don't need to try to fix everything at once. And you just need to, you know, understand and have compassion for yourself that perimenopause is already a huge recalibration for any body, even a very healthy, balanced body. But when you layer it on top of a pre-existing chronic illness, you know, system imbalances, environmental burdens like mold, your body is asking for compassion, care, and consistency. So even some of these small changes that we've talked about today, one nourishing meal, one deep breath, one better night's sleep, all of these can ripple into real, like, improving your resilience in that moment, in that day, and then build upon each other over time as well. So if this episode resonated with you, I'd love to support you in a more deeper way, if it feels like it's calling you, to work with me on a one-to-one basis to really dive into your unique case history, your current situation. If you're dealing with any of these chronic illnesses or imbalances, we could do this by way of my deep dive and roadmap package, which is one 90-minute consultation, deep dive consultation, after I have really carefully and thoroughly evaluated your own unique case history, like I said, in your current situation, what it is you want to get out of working together. And then after our deep dive 90-minute session, I then put together a personalized roadmap just for you that really just guides you in the way that I feel would be best for you. And we can also do it in my 3-month package, which is basically the deep dive and roadmap, but it's a 3-month package. So we continue meeting each other regularly over 3 months to make sure that you're implementing everything, and if we need to tweak anything in your roadmap and see how you're going. So do get in touch if that's something that sounds like it could be good for you. You can just drop me an email at francesca@francescalipperotti.com, or you can just head over to my website. You'll find everything on the services page, and you can book through there or apply through there, whatever works for you. So just to say, you're not alone. You can feel better one layer, one step at a time. You can do it. And thank you for listening. And until next time, I hope you all have a good week, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescalipperotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.